Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us on Thursdays at noon, and we appreciate same. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be back. Got a lot to talk about this morning.
Absolutely. Let's start out with the NOPD consent decree. I just had the opportunity to speak with Jonathan Arony, the consent decree monitor. I read the report that the final report that he issued to the court. Very interesting, some of the observations there. So let's start off right there.
So let's begin at the beginning in this. So there has been a lot of teeth mashing and a lot of comments about the cost, and the police department doesn't need to be under a consent decree now. Well, keep in mind that after Katrina, we saw the ugly underbelly of the New Orleans Police Department. And make no mistakes about it, the NOPD needed to be under a consent decree. The police department was incapable of policing itself. It demanded that there be some accountability for the atrocities that occurred and the management failures within the police department. So this consent decree wasn't an option, wasn't a luxury, it was a necessity. So the police department earned and deserved to be under a consent decree. And yesterday was the recognition that over the past 12 plus years, the department has in fact reformed and transformed their culture and is deserving of being allowed to exit the consent decree. That's what happened yesterday. And at every step along the way, and there's been a journey, we've been talking about this for years, and this is a major accomplishment. And the thing that I've been trying to send the message, because some people opposing the consent decree, saying it's outlived its usefulness, is that they were arguing that that was an impediment to the New Orleans Police Department addressing crime in the community. And the Crime Commission, over the last several years, has been issuing weekly updates on crime trends, every category of crime, measuring the calls for service, measuring the arrests made by the police. And what we're seeing is that crime has gone down over the last several years as the police department was more and more in compliance with the consent decree. And as a result of their compliance with the consent decree, the police department was able to focus on their primary mission, which is to protect and serve the people of the city of New Orleans. So as the police department was better managed and was following their own policy rules and procedures, they are a more effective force in combating crime in this community, as we've documented over the years, with a steady reduction in violent crime. So, what we've seen is that just since 2020, the homicide rate is down 20% from what it was then. In fact, in 2020, it started ticking up. And in 2022, it was at 49% lower today than it was in 2022. In every category of crime across the boards, and that's because the police department is better able today because of the hard work that they've accomplished to focus on crime. And the consent decree has helped the police department be a more impactful and effective crime-fighting force in this community.
Yeah, I believe that as well. And you know, I had an interesting conversation with Jonathan about a number of things. About, you know, there were times over this 12-plus years that things seemed to, you know, we were on a path that was had a lot of twists and turns. And then it seemed as though the path straightened out and we were able to make some significant inroads at a much quicker pace, and he agreed. And there were also times, and I think you would agree, Rafi, that there were cases that arose that really tested the system. And in some cases, the system succeeded, but in other cases, the system failed. Your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. So keep in mind that what we saw after Katrina, what happened after Katrina with Danziger and some of the other atrocities that surfaced, you know, those were symptoms of not the storm or months or a year of dysfunctionality. Those were decades of dysfunctionality. So, you know, keep in mind that when the Crime Commission was founded in 1952, the business community was concerned about the crime rate in the city of New Orleans, and they quickly came to the conclusion that crime was out of control in the early 1950s because the police department was so dysfunctional internally, it was incapable of combating crime externally in the community. So we've seen history repeat itself over and over again. And when what occurred after Katrina with Danziger and some of the other cases, it proved that the police department was incapable of combating crime. I personally believe that instead of 13 years, it took 13 years to enter compliance in this thing, I think it would have been done in probably 10 years or less if there was not some political influence in delaying the police department's compliance with the consent decree. So, yes, the consent decree and what's been accomplished doesn't mean that it's made the police department bulletproof. There ain't going to be any scandals. There ain't going to be any more wrongdoing by officers. Of course there's going to be. So when these issues surface, and yesterday I was present for the ceremony yesterday, the hearing that was conducted at the Loyola Law School. And Judge Morgan, in her concluding comments, you know, talked about the fact that, yes, we're here celebrating and acknowledging the consents of the consent decree. But she said, I also am taking note of the overtime investigation and the potential scandal. But the thing is that because of this consent decree now, when issues like this arise, the police department is better capable now of dealing with this and policing themselves. They don't need the federal government looking over their shoulder. The police department has earned the right now and proven that they have the ability to perform constitutional policing, and that's not mutually exclusive to the police department achieving their primary mission, which is to reduce crime by better protecting the public, you know, in New Orleans. So, you know, this was a major accomplishment. This wasn't, you know, a federal overreach. Yes, it took a long time. Yes, it cost money. But the cost of not fixing this, I don't think anyone really knows how many, you know, what the value is of the civil judgments that the police department has paid because they weren't practicing constitutional policing. And over the past 13 years, you've seen fewer civil judgments against the police department, in part because there's better supervision, there's more adherence to policies, rules, and procedures. And what we've seen over the last couple of years is the department did a better job of practicing constitutional policing. We also saw crime being reduced on a regular and dramatic basis.
Yeah, and our return on our investment, right, improves depending upon our ability or capability to continue down this path of improving upon the delivery of constitutional policing, minding the P's and Q's, doing the appropriate management, things relative to management and leadership, incredible leadership within the organization.
Absolutely. So the real impact of the consent decree is what happens starting yesterday going forward. Are we going to maintain the achievements and accomplishments, that maintain the reforms and transformation in culture after the federal government is gone, as we did while they were here? And at some point in time, you know, we have to be left to our own. My position is, my belief is, the police department is in a better condition today, better suited and capable of managing itself. I think that last week we saw the New Orleans City Council enact an ordinance that requires and calls for a third party to monitor the continued compliance with the provisions of the consent decree. The only caveat, the only problem that I see with that ordinance is that that ordinance mandates that there be third party annual reports about the police department maintaining compliance, but there isn't a funding mechanism. So those reports are contingent upon available public funds. That is not a luxury, that's a necessity. And if the public is going to continue to trust the reforms and transparency, it has to be documented on a regular basis and not contingent upon the whims of the council or the mayor. That needs to be, I believe, an absolute necessity, that funding for that annual assessment be baked into the operating budget so that the public, the police department cannot be effective in continuing to reduce crime if they don't enjoy the public's trust. And I think that annual audit showing that the department is maintaining compliance with the provisions of the consent decree is in fact still occurring. And so I think it's great that the council did this. They probably didn't want to bake into that ordinance a mandate to fund this thing in light of the budgetary constraints. But this is not a luxury. It is a necessity that there be this independent third party doing it. I think there is a way to do it that wouldn't require any additional money, and that would be having that annual audit done by the New Orleans Office of Inspector General. They're already funded out of percentage of the operating budget. And if they were to perform this, there'd be no additional cost to taxpayers, and it would be, you know, an annual process. So I think that, you know, there is a recognition that the hard part of this now is maintaining it. And now that no one's going to be watching, it's going to be incumbent upon the people of the city of New Orleans, the police department, and the political leadership, which is going to be the executive and legislative branches of government, that ensure that all of the hard work is not squandered in the years ahead, because it's critically important to the continued position of trust and the effectiveness of the police department in policing the city.
Help me out here. I can't remember the name of the position, but isn't there another position that we have kind of a police monitor?
The independent police monitor, the IPM.
So, you know, and how much of a staff does that individual have?
Not much.
That's, I mean, wouldn't it make sense to move that role and to have that role filled by the OIG and let the OIG take on that and create this, you know, scenario where we're spending money on that. They got little or no staff. I mean, I just think it's a function better served under the construct of the OIG. And I think we can save money and deliver a better quality product.
I agree. And the people of the city of New Orleans after Katrina, when they approved the creation of the OIG's office and the Independent Police Monitor, the initial charter change made the Independent Police Monitor a component, and they were united together with the Office of Inspector General. So the Office of Inspector General was responsible for managing the Independent Police Monitor. The Office of Inspector General had the ability to hire and fire the Independent Police Monitor. But after several years, there was a feud that evolved between the Inspector General and the Independent Police Monitor. The Inspector General at the time was Ed Quattrovo, and the Independent Police Monitor was Susan Hudson. And they couldn't work together, so the charter was changed, separating the two entities. I think that was a mistake, and I'd like to see the charter resume and return to what was initially proposed to the public, what was initially approved by the public, and put those two back together. Because if the Independent Police Monitor cannot perform or does not have the resources or the ability to do it, it can be compensated for by the funding that the IPM is receiving being utilized by the Office of Inspector General. And right now, the Office of Inspector General is performing audits involving the police department, is conducting investigations involving police misconduct. So one of the things that was announced yesterday is the Office of Inspector General is going to be embedding an officer or an investigator in the public integrity or internal affairs unit. So there'll be third-party independent oversight over the complaints that are coming in to make sure that the Office of Public Integrity Bureau, that the Internal Affairs Department is in fact appropriately working up and documenting police misconduct cases. So this would just be, I believe, a logical extension and continuation of what the Office of Inspector General is currently doing. And by putting the IPM and the Office of Inspector General back into a single entity, that was what the public initially approved. And I think that the way it is right now is not working, and I think it would be a better utilization of public resources by putting those two agencies back together as the public initially did when the office was created.
I totally agree. And maybe there can be some conversation about that. We got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
With us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, let's pivot to the next topic. We have a new sheriff that was elected in Orleans Parish. However, she doesn't take office until July 1st of of 2020. May 1st of 2026. That's right. It's a little different in Orleans than everywhere else, as always. And so we got about 6 months yet before she takes office.
Yeah. So, you know, Michelle Woodfork, you know, was, you know, defeated the incumbent sheriff in the general primary. You know, so that is very, very unusual. She basically received a mandate, and the public rejected the incumbent sheriff, Susan Hudson, in this. But we have to wait another 6 months before the duly elected sheriff has any ability to assume authority over the jail. So to call the sheriff's, the condition of the sheriff's office a mess is an understatement. That's why Michelle Woodfork won in the general primary, defeating an incumbent first-term sheriff, which is virtually unheard of. Michelle Woodfork is going to be the first sheriff since Sheriff Foti, and I go back a long way, but I don't go back much before him. So none of the most recent sheriffs had any law enforcement background. But Michelle Woodfork, even though she has, 20 plus years of experience as a police officer, she doesn't have any corrections experience, but she does have a background in the criminal justice system and in the police department. And everybody that's in that jail was put there by the New Orleans Police Department. She was the interim superintendent up until 2 years ago. And so she knows better than any of her previous predecessors, you know, the nature of the offenders from day one. I was talking to her the other day, and she said, you know, I recognize the inmate population, what they are. And she said, I'm going to refer to them as inmates and not residents. I realize that these inmates are some of the most dangerous offenders in the city of New Orleans. So it shows, I think, a recognition of the task that the sheriff has in taking over that jail. The thing that concerns me the most is she has to wait another 6 months before she can assume any control. Now, that's, you know, that's state statute that says that she doesn't take office. But what's happening right now is the city council is approving an operating budget for next year. And the public didn't reelect the incumbent sheriff in large part because the incumbent sheriff didn't do a very effective job in performing her fiscal and fiduciary responsibilities in operating that jail and maintaining the maintenance in that jail. You know, we saw a symptom of her dysfunctionality with the inmate escape that occurred last May. And to make a bad situation worse is that after that inmate escape, it was disclosed that there were over 1,000 open maintenance work orders that needed to be addressed. And the sheriff's office budget is one of the largest budgets in the city of New Orleans. That jail, we issue reports every week. There's about 1,400 inmates in there. 60% of those inmates are in there for felony crimes of violence or felony weapons offenses. The other 40% that are in there for property and drugs have extensive criminal histories that include convictions for violence and weapons offenses. So that's a concentration of the worst of the worst. And the reason that crime is down in this city is because the police department has identified the violent and repeat offenders, and they're now behind bars. And now the sheriff has the responsibility of maintaining a safe jail. The incumbent did not have the ability and did not perform that duty, but the elected sheriff has to wait another 6 months and she's going to be saddled with a budget that she has no input in on. She has no idea what some of the issues are. There's been a brief tour that was provided by for her and her transition team, and the only document that's been shared so far is an organizational chart. So as early next month, the council has to approve an operating budget, and the new sheriff has no idea whether that budget is realistic, and she's going to have to wait until May to find out what's happening. Hopefully, in the days and weeks ahead, there is more urgency in creating, you know, an engaged transition from the current administration to the newly elected administration. But this is something that is so critical to the criminal justice system, because not only does the sheriff's office have responsibility for maintaining a safe jail, if those inmates can't get from the jail to the courthouse, those cases can't be moved. And what we're seeing is the cost of pretrial detention in the city is millions and millions of dollars. If these cases move through the system, then the city saves money. But the existing sheriff has been challenged to get inmates from the jail, which is a block away, you know, into the courthouse so that their cases can be moved. And the Crime Commission has documented the backlog of cases in the system, and some of that is because the sheriff's office can't produce inmates in court in a timely manner that restricts the court's ability to conduct the hearings that are necessary to move those cases through the legal process.
You know, I'm very concerned, as you point out, the budget is going to be slashed by $27 million or 26%. A lot of the previous folks in that office treated that facility as a prison and not just simply a jail, and there's a huge delta between those two terms. And in the short term, it's going to mean that we're not going to be able to deliver rehabilitative services. That's more of the responsibility of a prison as opposed to a jail. The jail is just pretrial detainees. You can't compel them to really do much of anything. And unless and until we come to that realization, we're not going to be able to afford 1,400 inmates, and we're not going to be able to afford 1,000 inmates. And there's going to have to be some fundamental changes internally as to how we view that facility. And unless and until we get there, the math is just not going to help us at all. And
all right, keep in mind, the reason that crime is down in this community, it's because those 1,400 inmates have been taken off the streets.
I know that better than anybody.
I know you get that. You know, the public needs to realize that.
So
everybody
right.
wants fewer inmates in jail, and the way you achieve that is by reducing crime.
So selective incapacitation of the impact criminal, plain and simple.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, that's where it's at. All right, let's pivot. Mayor LaToya Cantrell continues on her desire and her track to be able to contact Jeffrey Vapi. The court says not so fast.
Well, right. So, at a time when the city didn't know if they can meet payroll between now and the end of the year, the mayor is yet to make any public statements about any of that. But I noticed at the end of last month when, the city council was trying to figure out how they're going to make payroll, the thing that the mayor was concerned about was getting her criminal defense attorney to file another motion in court to allow her to have private meetings with her co-defendant, former officer Jeffrey Vapi. So when the mayor was indicted earlier this year, the Department of Justice, the United States Attorney's Office, petitioned the judge to not allow for the mayor and Officer Vappy to meet unless their meetings were supervised by their criminal defense counsel. So the U.S. Attorney's Office acknowledged that the mayor and Officer Vappy need to be able to work on their legal defense, but the position of the government was that when they were meeting privately before the indictment, the government is alleging that the mayor and Officer Vappy colluded to commit federal crimes and attempted to cover up and obstruct the investigation and justice. So when the indictment came down, the government petitioned the judge to restrict the mayor and Officer Vappy from meeting privately. They can only meet with their defense counsel. So at the end of last month, when the city was trying to figure out if they could borrow money and meet payroll, the mayor was having her private criminal defense attorney petition the judge for a rehearing on her request to be able to meet with Officer Vappy privately without defense counsel. And what happened 2 days ago is that the court ruled that she is not going to be able to meet with her co-defendant without their attorneys being present. So again, what this demonstrates is the mayor's focus is strictly on herself and her own wants and desires, and nothing to do with her responsibility of managing the affairs of the city of New Orleans.
We do have our priorities, no doubt about that. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, let's pivot to the most recent story, this NOPD overtime abuse case. Just for the benefit of the listening audience, NOPD policy allows 40-hour work week, and in addition to that, 56 hours of overtime and or detail work on top of it, for a total of 96 hours. Obviously, there's been abuse in the reporting and actually showing up there. I've referred to it, Rafi. One, in my view, it's payroll fraud, and for anybody to call it anything else, I think, is disingenuous. And two, I've also characterized this as a cover-up scheme, because if you have sergeants that are actually supervising, they should know whether or not this individual is actually in that district working that overtime or not. And I think they need to be investigated as well. Your thoughts?
I agree completely with everything that you said. So one of the things that you've taught me through the years, so what you just described is what you call the what. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with, you know, Fox 8, undercover cameras, documenting two officers, a senior police officer that in 2024 logged more than 146 16-hour plus work days in 2024. Between January and July of this year, he recorded 120 days of 16-hour shifts with only 11 days off. In 2024, the highest paid police officer was a sergeant with earning more than $245,000 in overtime. So his base salary was $83,000, The remainder, the difference between 83 and 245 was overtime. How do you work those hours in light of the rules that you just described? In the first segment, we talked about enforcement of the policies, rules, and procedures. So every one of these individuals that may have committed a crime, why has it taken this long to identify this as a problem? That is what you just discussed. Not only are these officers committing payroll fraud, where did the supervisors fail in all of this? Why did we have to find out from Skip Gallagher? Or why did we have to find out from local news media? Why did the police department not know that this was going on? And it's because the supervision in place failed. So as I talked about yesterday, at the conclusion of the consent decree hearings, the judge acknowledged that, you know, there was this impending investigation and scandal regarding overtime abuse. So what we're going to find out is how the police department is going to go about, now that this they're aware of this, fixing this problem. And not only is it going to result in, I think, discipline and maybe even criminal charges against some of the individuals that have abused this authority and potentially committed payroll fraud, I think that the department's investigation needs to include the failure of supervisors to capture this. Now, I've been told this. I don't know if it's a fact or not. But what I've been told is that the supervisors are supposed to digitally input the payroll records of their subordinates into the system for payment. So when they're doing that, they're supposed to be reviewing the payroll records. But what has been alleged is that some of the supervisors have provided their codes into the computer, their access codes, to the individual officers for them to submit their own payroll records without any review or supervision by the supervisors.
Yeah, just another type of payroll fraud. Exactly. You know, I'm paying you to do A, B, and
C. It's malfeasance.
You don't want to do C, so you let somebody else do it. Everybody wants to be a supervisor, but no one wants to supervise. And I keep hearing from folks that there's this culture inside of the NOPD, and it has to do with a particular high school, and I'm not going to name it because I don't think it's going to be fair, that everyone that graduated from there, they all take care. It's this go-along to get-along mentality, and it needs to be broken up because people do not want to point out the obvious and don't want to come forward with information, and they don't do it because they fear the retaliation within the organization. That is not a healthy organization. And if, in fact, that is going on, that needs to be looked at, investigated, and eliminated now, because it's a cancer that, on the underbelly of this organization. And let me tell you, I've heard that over a dozen times. In fact, I don't even want to hear it anymore. When I was talking to Skip Gallagher the other day, Rafi, we were talking about a case, and I think it was the one that just got resolved that I'm not sure. I hadn't talked to Skip. He refused to talk about the case because he said, I have to live in this city, and I fear what might happen to talk about it. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, that's scary. What? Mm-hmm. I mean, where does that lie?
No, I agree. I agree with everything you just said, but what I also want your audience to recognize is that because of the staffing deficiencies, the New Orleans Police Department has to rely on overtime to compensate for the lack of officers. And the overwhelming majority of officers that are paid overtime have earned that overtime and are doing it by the book. There's going to be a couple of rotten apples in every barrel. And the officers that are the rotten barrels, they're being investigated right now. And the supervisors that allowed that to happen are being investigated right now. So, but what I want the public to recognize is this isn't a luxury. It's a necessity to compensate for the staffing deficiencies by paying officers to work overtime. But as the consent decree requires, they have to perform that overtime in conformity with the policies, rules, and procedures. A few select few officers are not. They need to be investigated and held accountable. And if supervisors failed to perform their duties appropriately that allowed that to occur, they need to be held accountable too. That's what's in the process of transpiring right now. And there'll be some, I think, investigations and potentially some other public disclosures in the near future. So police department it took too long for them to recognize.
You know the challenge, though, Rafi? The challenge right now is I firmly believe in everything you just said, that the vast majority of the officers are doing it the right way. But you know, want to know something? There's no way to prove it because they didn't have a process in place. It's all on the honor system. And, you know, that puts officers in a very difficult position, and it's a very difficult proposition moving forward. And thankfully, they changed it. They're going to biometrics. You got to report to the district. The good are going to suffer for the bad. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But the fact of the matter is they need to do it for the 40 hours that they're working as well. Because right now, the confidence in the payroll system and the way that they account for payroll has been shaken. And the only way you're going to win it back is to put those measures in place to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed. As always, we have run out of time real quick. And I appreciate you joining us, and have a great weekend.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving. All right.
Thank you, sir. That's Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back, folks. Check in with Scoot. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.